Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 2 of the Design Patterns podcast. Today we have Jocelyn. How are you doing today?
I'm really good. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining. So why don't you start off by saying who you are today? Just introduce yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Jocelyn, like you said, and I am actually just graduated this past semester from MIT as a course 614, which is computer science, economics, and data science. And so now I'm sort of on an in-between before I start working at Facebook next fall.
Mm-hmm. And so that means you got a return offer from Facebook, right? Because you were doing an internship there a few months back, right?
Yeah, this summer I actually worked as a software engineering intern at the Facebook Boston office, and I was lucky enough to receive a return offer there and accepted it. So I'm excited.
Nice. So was that like a summer internship or was it during the semester?
Yeah, it was a 12-week summer internship. So it started in like around May and then went through the whole summer. So I've actually only done summer internships because I'm so busy during the school year, but this was a really great opportunity and it was fun.
Mm-hmm. So did you have any other internships other than Facebook?
Yeah, before that, I've actually only done one other internship besides Facebook. Is the summer before I worked at AT&T. I was part of their technology development program, which is a mix of like project engineers and then software engineers and what they call network engineers, which is essentially like computer programmers who work with data more. And so I worked as a part of that program where they place you in teams among the AT&T staff, and you basically get to work like in tech in a broader team. So I worked in basically the business department of AT&T doing tech.
I see. So why don't we start off by kind of explaining a bit what you did at your last internship at Facebook. What product were you working on, if it's not confidential, and what was your kind of like responsibility there?
Yeah, so I worked on the spatial computing team, which is everything that has to do with kind of maps type thing. And my specific project was more on the internal side. So nothing I built is what you'll actually see when you're using the Facebook app, but I focus more on making things easier for my team and working on internal processes. A lot of the things we're doing kind of take a lot of time and are very new. So my main job was to just improve the communication pipeline. And I was writing a lot of code that just like showed the engineers what was happening and translated mm-hmm. that, especially for the people on my team who weren't necessarily coders.
And so 12 weeks is roughly about like 3 months. How did you adjust to this new role so quickly? Because, well, first you were obviously starting a job at a new company you haven't worked before. Second, you were working on a product you weren't working before. So how did you manage to, you know, do or be productive or do so much in like 3 months?
Yeah, so it was very interesting because I was also a remote intern because I worked last summer with COVID.
All right.
And these were the first remote interns Facebook had ever had. So knowing that, I was pretty nervous going in that they weren't really going to know what to do with me. But I got really lucky that I had a really good manager and he was super responsive to everything I needed and was super communicative from the start. So if you're a Facebook full-time employee, you actually go to boot camp, and that's like a 6-week training program to learn how to use Facebook. But as an intern, I got 1 week where they gave me a couple of tiny, super easy projects to do to kind of get familiar with the software. And then I was thrown right into it. But for me, I think I'm a really fast learner and I learn by doing things. So this environment where they did just throw us right into it and tell us exactly, like give us a project and then say go, was something that was really like worked well for my learning style.
And during your internship, did you have like a mentor or a buddy you worked close with that kind of helped you, you know, understand the code base and get familiar with the product?
Yeah, so I had my manager, which I met with once a week, and he kept me updated. And also, if I ever needed anything during the week, I could text him. And then I also had a group of 2 or 3 other engineers on the team who were also full-time employees. They created a little group chat for me and was like, this is your place to ask all of your questions. So I worked on a team that was pretty small. And so I was lucky enough that literally everyone on the team was really like wanted to help me and wanted to make my experience the best as possible. And so that was something that was really helpful for me, but there was only one other intern on my desk and we worked on completely different things. So as far as peers, I didn't have a lot, but I had a lot of support from the other full-time engineers.
And when you were doing an internship at AT&T as well, I'm assuming you were a part of a team too. So was it also like a small team or a bigger team?
Yeah, so I worked in business marketing at AT&T and that was a huge team. So it was very different because they had people doing all sorts of different things, like all sorts of range of skills at AT&T, and the team was huge. So I didn't even ever meet everyone on my team. But what made the AT&T experience different is that I worked directly with three other interns. And so even though I didn't have as much of a direct like communication with everyone on my team, I had a lot more communication with other interns to help me do the work.
And how did you feel it was adapting to working with, you know, even like a small team of three or four people when you come from university where mostly, you know, you work on your own or you work in pairs? So how did you feel like it was adjusting to working with a proper like team?
Yeah, so one thing that's interesting about MIT is that it really emphasizes being collaborative. So even though I actually had to complete all of my assignments on my own, there were so many times that we would work in big groups to complete our PSATs and assignments and things anyways, which I think is really unique to a lot of other schools because basically MIT tells you that if you don't work with other people, you're not getting it done. So I think I was really primed to know when I needed to rely on other people versus when it was my responsibility to get the work done and get the work done for the group. So I feel like I was pretty well prepared to move into a group setting, which is good. But being in an office is a different experience anyways. So it was interesting adjusting to being in an office and having the manager role and then like their superior role versus just having everyone on the same page.
Yeah, definitely. Once you start working at a company and there's this sort of like hierarchy of, you know, your manager or your team leader, and then, you know, their supervisors and stuff like that, it definitely kind of takes time to get adjusted to that or figure out when you have a problem, who do you really turn, like, who do you talk to if it's like, you know, a problem with your code or it's a, you know, more of like a problem with something else, like kind of figuring out who's who and who to approach. So definitely that's something that I feel like is very hard when you transition from university to working at a big tech company.
Yeah, definitely. And then you have a problem and you're like, oh, I can't just go to the AVP to solve it when I know they have the answer and you clearly don't. So it's definitely like learning that.
Yeah, definitely. So with AT&T, did you do it just the year prior? Like, did you do it the summer right before the summer you were interning at Facebook?
Yeah, I did it the summer after my sophomore year, which was right before Facebook. And that was a 10-week internship down in Dallas. The summer after my freshman year, I actually did not do any like academic internship type thing. And I coached a basketball team. So very different.
Oh, so you're also kind of like a basketball player as well?
Yeah, I actually play on the basketball team at MIT. And then I, for like 3 or 4 years, have also coached teams in Connecticut.
Oh, okay. Then we'll get to that in a second, but because that's definitely interesting. What I wanted to ask you before that was, so your degree was both computer science, data science, and economics. Was that a 3-year degree or was it 4 years?
No, it's a regular 4-year degree. So, and it's also all one major. So a lot of times when I say the full name of it, people think I'm triple majoring and I'm not. But MIT is their computer science department and then the economics department. And essentially what they did is created a hybrid where half of your classes are in computer science and half are in economics. And then there's like 3 or 4 classes that are kind of the intersection of that, which is data science.
Data science,
yeah. And so, yeah, it's my I got a Bachelor of Engineering in that, but basically you're taking a lot of classes in like two separate skills, and then it's up to you for the most part to figure out how they mix together.
And did you feel like what did you feel were the classes that really helped you when transitioning into actually working at a company? Because a lot of times what we learn in university are kind of like more theoretical stuff, you know, obviously because we need that, you know, like math, physics, that kind of like basis, since we're doing engineering. But when you start working in real life, you realize that there are a lot of things that you don't know. There are just like tools you use for, you know, for programming, like CI and CD tools or version control like Git and stuff like that. So do you feel like there were particular courses at MIT that helped you more than others when you were starting to work? Let's say first time when you started AT&T, then second time when you were working at Facebook, which was obviously you had more courses under your belt. So.
Yeah, I actually have two answers for this. So the class that I think helped me get jobs the most or best for like interviewing prep was I took two different algorithms classes, like basic algorithms and then design and analysis of algorithms. And I think that was huge for helping me in the interview process, because a lot of my interviews, they were asking you to come up with algorithms quickly on the spot. And so having the experience in classes of designing algorithms and forcing your brain to think about how to solve problems the way those classes made you think, super, super helpful, and definitely the reason I got a job. But once I actually started working, I would say the class I took, it's called 6009. It's basically our like programming class. And I'd say that was the most helpful just because it's the class that actually taught me how to code really well. And since I am a software engineer, that was the most helpful for me actually physically while I was working.
And I saw not too long ago, there was someone that posted like an MIT course called Your Missing CS Semester or something like that. Did you hear about that?
What is it called?
Your Missing Semester or Your Missing CS Semester or something like that, which is, it's an open course at MIT. I think I'll send you the link later, and I'll also have that in the description. Basically, it's like 13 lectures where they cover all the things like I mentioned, like Git, version control, working with Vim. I guess like more like Linux stuff as well, since a lot of times you'll be working with Linux, and some tests, like how to do unit testing, stuff like that. So like more practical stuff.
I haven't heard of it, but that definitely sounds helpful, because all of that is stuff I had to learn on the fly. When I first started working at AT&T, I actually had never used GitHub in my entire life. And then I had to figure out how to use GitHub to upload my files without killing the entire database. It was actually a point where I deleted a whole folder at like completely gone from AT&T's database when I first started working there. So knowing how to use Git definitely would have been helpful in advance.
Yeah. And did you, where did you feel like helped you the most for your experience? So here's what I mean. So you interned at AT&T, and that was kind of like your first work at, you know, at the field of computer science. And then a year later, when you have obviously a lot more experience, you started working at Facebook. But where did you feel like gave you the most, or was the most like you had more steep like change between what you knew at the start of the internship to where you ended up?
Most definitely Facebook. I think I learned way more than when I was at AT&T, simply because I was in a place to learn more, kind of. So when I was at AT&T, because I was only a sophomore, I had a lot less skills, especially because a lot of the other people who got that internship were juniors. So I was just simply less experienced. And so a lot of the learning that I had at AT&T was more about how a big company works, how I should function in a company, and a lot of soft skills there. Whereas my actual project that I was doing was not that challenging there. I probably could have done a lot more than I actually was assigned to do. Mm-hmm. Where that Facebook, I kind of already had those soft skills, so I didn't need to learn them, and I was already in a place to just work on technical skills. Facebook was set up in a way where they gave me my entire project mapped out on day one, which meant that I knew exactly what I had to do, which also meant that I could just get it done and then start learning more things. And because of knowing exactly what I had to do and then having that freedom to learn more, I was able to learn a lot more technical skills and grow a lot more as a programmer while I was at Facebook.
And what do you think helped you get a return offer from Facebook? So obviously the kind of like the goal of those internships at every single company really is that for you to later, so there it's kind of like a training before you actually join them for a full-time position, but not everybody get a return offer. It's like, that's their goal, but you obviously have to, you know, be good at what you're doing. So what do you think kind of helped you stand out or make them actually want you to return for a full-time position?
Yeah, for sure. So like I said earlier, they gave me the project in advance, and I finished everything that they expected of me. So that's definitely a baseline. But then I didn't stop there, and I made sure I was reaching stretch milestones and going out of my way. And with this, it's not enough just to do a side project thing that you think helps. I made sure I was reaching out to a lot of people on the team besides just my manager and my mentors around me. So I was reaching out to extended people on the team and being like, hi, what do you need me to do? What can I do to make my project better that will help you succeed? And so not only was that creating networks of people who were going to speak up for me and say that they wanted me to come back to the company, but it was providing real concrete value. And then there were specific people who were going to support the fact that I had concrete value. So I would say definitely reaching out to as many people as you can and trying to help as many people's jobs become easier as you possibly can.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because I feel like a lot of times people try to figure out, okay, how do I even like get a job interview, or how do I actually get an offer from a company for an internship? But then they forget that you actually need to work, like you actually need to do your internship and you actually need to be good at it. So, and I feel like that's even the hardest part, because, okay, like doing the interviews, usually the interviews are very similar between different companies, especially when you talk about like the big tech companies. It's pretty much the same for all of them. But then when you actually start working and you have like deadlines and you need to deliver things on time, especially when you're talking about a summer internship that is really short, like 3 months, you basically have to study everything from scratch and deliver on time. That's definitely like the hardest part in my eyes. So that's why I was asking that question, because I'm really fascinated about, you know, how people get adjusted to that, to their internship. How do they, or maybe it's their first internship, how do they like stand out from the rest and actually, you know, prove that they belong there? Because I feel like a lot of times people suffer from like imposter syndrome when they actually start, you know, working, and they're like, wow, I didn't learn anything so far and everything is like, yeah, so hard. And a lot of times you feel like you still need that kind of like help from someone who is like more senior than you. Even for me now, like I've been working at Red Hat for over a year on the same product, and still I feel like there are a lot of things that obviously I don't know. And it gets really frustrating at times to, you know, you feel like, okay, I'm basically stuck. And if I'm not going to get help here, I will not be able to like do anything. I feel like that's something.
The good
like,
thing about being.
Yeah, go on.
Sorry. I was going to say the good part about being an intern is that no one expects really anything from you. So what I did to deal with my imposter syndrome, which I definitely had, was just being like, everyone expects me to suck because I'm just a lowly intern. So anything I do is added value for them and for that team than if I wasn't there at all, which kind of helps sometimes. I mean, again, when I'm completely stuck on a project, it's still super frustrating and I feel like I should be able to figure it out. But remembering that no one is expecting you to know everything, especially as an intern, has been huge for me.
Yeah, and like you said, basically, a lot of times the goal with this internship is kind of like do something. It's usually when the team recognizes, okay, we really need to get something done, but we don't have manpower for that, or none of us has time for that. So let's just create like a student role for that. And then, so really what you're doing, like you said, is really just providing them more value and helping them rather than like, you know, having this chip on your shoulder where like, oh, you know, if you didn't do this, I could have just done it much faster or stuff like that. So yeah, that definitely helps to like remember that, you know, there isn't like a stupid question. It's all better to, you know, just ask if you don't know something or you need help so that you can progress. And remembering that, you know, you're a part of the team and essentially everybody have the same goal, which is, you know, creating that product on time and that it'll be reliable and good. So they're there to help you as well. And they do remember that you're just a student and everybody started out, you know, the same way when they were either a student or someone who just came out of a fresh like bootcamp, coding bootcamp or something like that. So definitely keeping those things in mind helps.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk a little bit about your time at MIT now that you kind of can reflect back. What's that like studying at, you know, obviously an Ivy League university and studying one of the hardest, you know, majors, which is computer science, then combine that with, you know, economics as well and data science. So you have to kind of be good at all those three things. So what was that like?
Yeah. So MIT is actually not an Ivy and we would take offense to that. So I have to like say that for the sake of any other MIT people that might be listening, we like to think of ourselves as a little bit better than the Ivies because we're not a liberal arts school. We're a STEM school, like a little bit of a superiority complex there. But I really enjoyed studying at MIT because like, obviously it's thought of as one of the most like rigorous institutions. It's one of the best schools in the world, but all the people there are honestly super down to earth, which is something you completely wouldn't expect. And that has helped a lot with people who like have imposter syndrome, because I felt like very much when I first started going that I didn't belong there. I got in by mistake, but I've met some of the coolest people in the entire world there, and all of them want everyone else to succeed at that school, which is really cool. So classes, definitely very difficult, definitely a lot of late nights, a lot of stress, but the people, 12 out of 10, made up for that because there were always people there to help out and to try and make your life easier as much as possible, which was really cool.
So you find yourself a lot of times kind of like having study groups, stuff like that for like the different classes?
Yeah, for sure. Every single class I was in, even if I didn't know anyone going into the class, there would always be groups of people that would emerge, or full class group chats that would show up where people would be texting about the answers and like helping everyone out. So MIT doesn't grade on a curve at all, which means that basically everyone can get A's if everyone deserves A's. And that promotes a culture of everyone wanting other people and their friends or not friends to succeed. So every single class I was in, there would always be a full class group chat and then little groups that would break out from that group chat to work together and get the work done.
Yeah, that's definitely something refreshing to hear, because almost all the universities I know definitely have that like grade curve that has to be maintained literally every single semester, which I don't get at all. But, you know, that's definitely refreshing to hear that MIT doesn't do that. And yeah, like you said, that encourages kind of like more collaborative work between the students and not having kind of that, you know, it's me against you, it's me against everybody, but more like, yeah, we all want to succeed.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely sets up more of a like us against the coursework, us against the professor, like, or like if it's a good professor with the professor, but like no one's ever competing against each other. So
yeah. And While you were studying at MIT, did you find yourself kind of like getting involved with other like interesting side projects, or just expanding your knowledge outside of like your coursework in order for maybe when you were preparing for a job interview, or when you were trying to get an internship, stuff like that. Did you find yourself doing extra work?
Yeah, so I'm definitely not the poster child for doing extra academic work. So, like I said earlier, I played basketball, which took up a ton of my time, like hours and hours and hours every week. And then I would also be very involved in basketball. I'm captain of my team, and I was also in the student athlete advisory committee and I'm president of that. So, most of my free hours went towards the athletic community because that's what I am most passionate about in just like extracurriculars and stuff. And so I didn't really do anything much outside academically. I definitely passed up a lot of opportunities on that front just that I could keep playing more basketball.
Yeah, but that's good to hear, because obviously I feel like it's really important to have that balance between like, your hobbies and your passions and, school and work, which obviously, okay, even if you really like computer science, like you obviously have other hobbies and other things you like doing. So a lot of times, like if you're only focusing on that, it'll just start taking a toll on you and you'll feel like that's all you're doing. And for me, I felt like, especially during the last year when with COVID, that we were basically everybody were stuck at their homes, that I felt like all I was doing really was like working or studying pretty much.
Yeah, for sure.
And I feel like it's not really productive to do that. So people have that mindset where it's like if you put in, let's say, X amount of hours into studying, then your grade will be Y. If you put in 2X amount of time, then your grade will be 2Y or something like that. But I think that it definitely doesn't work like that. I feel like there's like a maximum amount of hours you can study each day or each week. And a lot of times you do have to take that kind of like day off for yourself to just do something else.
Yeah,
But it's
especially
not.
with coding, I think that's true. Because I can't tell you the number of times where I've been stuck on a coding problem and then I've been like, okay, I'm quitting for right now and gone and like shot around or done something completely different for a super short time. And the second I sit back down at my computer, I have the answer. So having a hobby or something you can do to like step away from the computer, super, super helpful, underratedly helpful. I swear I do my best coding at the gym.
Really?
Yeah.
But what I was going to ask is, it's not so easy to, kind of take that time for yourself, because, I'm sure you felt that as well, with all the load of all the co coursework you have, and especially once you get closer to like exam or like finals week and stuff like that. How do you let yourself take that day off without, feeling bad that, you're taking a day off?
Yeah, so like I said, sometimes I try and like mix up short time chunks of each so that I'm never taking a full day off because I think that would start to overwhelm me. So when I get stuck on a problem, I just take a break, go do something fun, and then come back to it that same day a lot of times, and that helps. But also just at the end of the day, I have to remember and everyone has to remember that your mental health has to come first. And if you're struggling to focus or to stay concentrated, you're not ever doing your best work. So, something that I really pride myself in is that whenever I'm doing my work, I'm doing my top quality work. And so, maybe I'm not putting in as many hours as people who only do school all the time and are completely 100% focused on that. But for me, every single time I sit down at my laptop and I open up my PSAT or I open up my lab that I have to work on, I'm doing my 100% top quality work. And it's because I allow myself to take breaks and to step away from the school world for a little while. And so that was something in high school I didn't really get at all and definitely took me a while to learn. But once I did start taking breaks and realizing that my quality of work quality of work was improving. That was huge.
And do you also feel like that helps you, you know, kind of get rid of distractions, especially now? Like, I feel like it's so easy to, you know, especially when you're working from home, to, you know, be working or like coding and stuff, and then someone sends you a message and just quickly looking at that, and then you get sucked in to your phone, or maybe it's something completely different. You know, maybe you start just looking at random YouTube videos. Honestly, YouTube recommendations is such a such a bad thing, because once it kind of like realizes what you like, then you just get sucked into all those videos. So do you feel that, you know, having those kind of like set times or for yourself, for doing what you love or what you're passionate about, helps you kind of get rid of that need for messing around with like distractions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely still tempted by distractions. Like, if my phone is out, like face up in front of me, anytime it lights up, I'm going to look at it. But knowing that I'm going to have time for myself at this time does allow me to have the self-control to put my phone on the other desk and then close my messenger tabs and browser that are going to start lighting up while I work. Because if I didn't know I was taking a break, then I could just break whenever and start taking fake 5-minute YouTube messenger breaks every 5 minutes, which is definitely not helpful. So I think setting a time that you know you're going to be done and that you have to work till definitely give me way more self-control to put the distractions away.
And how did you manage your time during school? So did you actually have, and this is a question I actually ask everybody because I feel like it's really interesting, did you kind of make yourself a schedule or like everyday schedule or like a weekly schedule for what you have to do, kind of like set in time slots for, you know, other than obviously like the lectures you had to attend, like tutorials you had to attend or workshops, for like that extra, yeah, you know, so like doing homework or preparing for an exam or playing basketball?
Yeah, so I have like a Google Keep note of every single assignment I have to do for the entire semester that I literally just, it's a super, super long list that I keep on my laptop starting from the very beginning of the semester. And then on my Google Calendar, I have my practices and school work that is mandatory to do. But then I don't set myself advanced times to study because I just never know kind of what's going to come up, what my mental state is going to be that day, dynamic, to kind of know in advance. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what I do to make sure I am getting all my work done is backlog my Google Calendar. So when I'm done with a day, I fill out everything that I did, every chunk of time that I spent during that entire day. I put it into my Google Calendar and I color code it, one color if I was being productive and another color if I was being distracted, so that when I look back on my day, I can see how much work I got done. And then over the course of the week, I aim to try and have more productive minutes than distracted procrastination minutes. And so having a tool that I can look back on has been super helpful. I find pre-planning doesn't help me, but post-planning and being able to look back on how productive I was the day before is really helpful for motivating me the next day.
And is that something you kind of picked up on as soon as you started at MIT, or maybe even prior to that, high school? Or did it kind of take you some time, like maybe your second year or third year? Because definitely I feel like the hardest thing at university is getting adjusted to university and realizing it's very different from high school, and what has worked for you in high school probably won't work for you at university. Yeah, you know, the way you were studying, or you know, how much you were preparing for an exam, or how you were managing your time. So is that something that kind of came easy for you, or did it take time?
Yeah, well, in high school I planned nothing at all because I just kind of floated through school. So yeah, I would just work whenever I got home from school. So when I first got to college, I tried to be one of the pre-planners and put block off times in advance that I was going to study. And then that just really wasn't working for me, and I kept missing days. And then at the end of days, I would go back and like drag the boxes to where I actually studied. And then gradually over time, it sort of kind of morphed into doing it after the fact and logging in my calendar after the fact, simply because my pre-planning was so horrible and so wrong. And so then as that morph kind of happened, like probably around like after my first semester of college, the beginning of my second semester, I just kind of naturally morphed into the post-planning mindset.
And was it, so did it take you kind of some time to get adjusted to that? Or because I feel like, you know, scheduling is something like, even if it's like post-planning, it's really, really hard to like keep up with that, as with anything in life, pretty much, to like do something like every single day or every single week. So how did you make that a habit of yours? Did you struggle at first doing that, or what kind of helped you make that a habit that, you know, you kept during all those years?
Yeah, so it's definitely something where, especially in the beginning, I would miss days or forget to do it, or I'd look back at the end of the week and be like, oh no, I haven't written anything in 3 days. I have no idea what I did. But over time, I think because I was consciously reminding myself that I had to do it, I got better at it. And it started being something that I would do every night immediately after I got back from dinner. Whenever the second I opened my laptop after dinner, I would log everything from earlier that day and the night before. And so setting that consistent time definitely helped me a lot. Before, when I was just writing stuff in, whenever I would kind of think to do it, so regardless of when that was in the day or how long it had been since I last did it, everything was really inconsistent because your mind can't remember to keep track of habits when it doesn't realize that they're habits. And so setting something at the same time every day and just doing that immediately after dinner really did help me, because then my mind realized, oh, this is a habit we have to keep up. And my fingers would just naturally open the Google Calendar immediately after I sat down.
Yeah. And do you feel like, so now obviously that you've graduated from MIT, so I'm assuming you're not going to be part of their basketball team anymore.
No, I am done now. So 3.5 year varsity team member.
And are you still going to like play basketball now? Or so here's where I'm going at with this. So now you're kind of like transitioning into a completely kind of different chapter in your life, where you don't have kind of like, you know, that school or university where you have these social groups or like, you know, sports teams, and you're kind of like on your own now. So are you still going to like play basketball in your free time, or how is that going to work? Basically what I'm asking is, how are you still going to you know, maintain your hobbies?
Yeah, for sure. So it's hard right now with COVID and everything being so uncertain. And also, I don't start work till August, so I'm not in any sort of pattern. But I'm hoping that once I actually start to get my real life hours and can go to the gym safely without worrying about catching COVID or anything, that I can just set time for myself. So at school, I knew that I had practice from 5 to 7 every single night. And so my goal is to create something similar for myself, where even if it's only 30 minutes, where I can go to the gym, and even if it's not playing basketball, but doing yoga or something, I want to make sure I'm doing something active for at least 30 minutes every day at the same time every night, because I know how important it is to get exercise and to stay healthy. So I do plan on creating that routine for myself and keeping it for as long as I possibly can. Right now, I'm not doing much of anything, but I'm hoping that like once life calms down, then I will figure it out.
So what are your plans until like August, pretty much? What do you plan on doing?
So me and my friends, who like half of them are still in school because they have to like finish their classes to graduate. And then like a few of us have already graduated early because we could. MIT is not allowing seniors back on campus this semester, which is the reason I graduated early, because just with COVID restrictions and stuff, it's too many people. And so we are trying to rent a house in like a different place every month so that we can stay super safe and not really travel a lot, but also see different areas of the world. So the goal is to just go to these different houses. I'll focus on my YouTube channel. I'll read more books, just kind of self-growth time period for me, but I'll hopefully go to different places.
And about your YouTube channel, so when did you like originally start it, or when did you kind of like start taking it a little bit more seriously?
Yeah, so I started my YouTube channel kind of as a joke because we were playing in the NCAA tournament and me and my friend were like, oh, we should record everything that happens just so we have these memories. And then we kind of bet each other who would make a better video. And so my very first video is literally recorded like vertically. So the quality is horrible because everything was wrong. But yeah. I ended up editing the video and posting it. And she never ended up doing anything with her footage at all. And then like a week later, me and that same friend went on a road trip together and just decided to keep filming because we both had a lot of fun filming. And so then like after that was like four or five more videos I think I posted of that time period. And so all of these things were just kind of like fun for the memories. But then I realized that I really enjoyed making videos. And so I started to transition into doing more serious videos, some sit down videos, just because I genuinely really enjoy editing the film, which I feel like is not something a lot of YouTubers say. Like, I feel like most people who make videos enjoy talking and hate the editing part, but I just started making videos because I genuinely love the editing and the memories are always fun to look back on.
Yeah, definitely. I share the same feeling. You know, I get excited whenever I go on like a road trip or I just, so what I did now was this, this semester was actually because it was also online, I just figured it doesn't really matter where I'm located because it's online. And also my work at Red Hat is from home since our offices are closed. Then I took advantage of that and actually flew to Canada for 2.5 months. Now I'm actually back in, I'm back in Israel. So I was spending 2.5 months there. My sister lives there. My sister and my niece who was born there. So I was like, you know what? I really want to take advantage of these kind of times, you know, because it's so easy to like look at what's going on in the world and be like, oh, everything is so bad. You know, and just kind of cuddle up in your house and not really go out, but there are still like advantages and things you can do. So that was kind of like my mindset going into that, where I was like, you know what, I really just want to try to make the most of out of it, similar to what you're planning to do with your friends, with like moving, you know, every single month, renting out a different place. I feel like that's something that, you know, is going to be in your memory forever. And what's going to help that is like making a video. So even before I like flew there, I knew like I'm going to make a video about that and I'm going to edit it. And honestly, it was like so much fun, you know, even just like looking at the footage and, you know, putting like some music, some background music to make you feel kind of like a main character of a movie or something. So definitely like editing videos is a lot of fun. But it can be like, what I find harder is coming up with ideas of what sort of video to make. So what I want to ask you is, which direction do you kind of see yourself taking your YouTube channel? Is it going to be more just like, you know, anything you want to make and kind of like documenting your life and your career and along the way, you know, coming out with like those sit down videos where you kind of help others or give advice, because I've seen that you do have some of those videos, and other videos you have are just, you know, like road trips that you did or something fun that you did. So do you see yourself continue with that kind of like same pattern? Or
yeah, it's definitely interesting because a lot of my videos are centered around MIT life, even when they're just vlogs, and I'm obviously not going to have that anymore. But my goal is to try and transition to a lot more higher percentage of work life and career advice videos, because I do think I have a lot of advice just even from my internships now. So I do want to create career life to be kind of the center of the channel, but along with that, I love vlogging. Like, so there's going to be videos like that too. I can't justify a channel if I'm not also putting enjoying the memory yeah. that I'm creating in real life on it. Yeah. And so I do like want to make a lot more career videos, while also there will still be vlogs and things like that on there because they're my favorite videos to watch back.
Sounds good. And in terms of your long-term goals, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And what do you think is going to help you achieve those goals?
Yeah, so this is a really hard question because I honestly don't know where I'm going. Hopefully, like career-wise in general, hopefully still working. I love programming, so hopefully, honestly, I'm still doing a job where I'm programming. I'm really excited to be starting work at Facebook, so I don't ever foresee that not being a part of my life. But I also just want to continue growing my social media presence through YouTube because hopefully that will continue to be a part of who I am and documenting my life. So in 5 years from now, hopefully my YouTube channel is a little bit bigger and I'm still doing that while also making power moves in actual business. I don't know. I don't really have a clear path right now, but here I am. I'm like, I feel like so excited that I've made it through school that now I'm like, oh no, I have to look forward and actually see what's happening after that. I'm so jealous,
actually. So. Yeah, I can't wait for that feeling, honestly, having all that behind me. Basically knowing, okay, I have like, let's say I'm working, I have to do whatever I have to do between like, let's say 9 to 5. And then when I finish work, I can just do whatever I want. And I don't have to have this feeling of, I need to, you know, make this, do this assignment, it's due in 2 days, and then I have to work on that project, then I have to work on that. And you will definitely have more time for yourself and kind of things that are more interesting to you. Basically, so outside of work hours, you can do whatever you want. So that is definitely something I'm very excited about, and I'm sure that you're very excited about. So
yes, yeah. The free time is going to be very exciting.
And hopefully you can, you know, do what you were planning with your friends. It sounds like a really awesome idea. So do you plan to do it inside the US or kind of like maybe outside of the US as well? Or
yeah, well, I mean, I guess it depends kind of the safety of the travel situation. Right now, we're going to try and drive from destination to destination as much as possible, just to kind of limit fly risk and all of that. But I mean, if the vaccine goes well and we can leave the country, that'd be great. It was always my goal after the summer after graduation to travel. I've never left the United States, so that was something I really wanted to do. But now it's TBD, but hopefully eventually.
And do you plan to do it like on the East Coast or West Coast of the United States? Or do you guys have no set plans right now and you're just gonna figure that out?
Yeah, we definitely are not planning that far in advance, but I think right now we want to head to the beach area. So we're thinking East Coast beach of some sort.
I see. Okay. Well, anything else you want to add? Where can people find you on which social platforms?
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube just by my name, Jocelyn Lutze, or on Instagram, Jocelyn_Lutze. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so links will be down in the description, definitely. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Jocelyn, thank you so much for joining for this episode. It was definitely a lot of fun having you on. I really like your energy and I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing what you're doing with your YouTube channel and of course your professional career. I feel like you're definitely a very interesting person, so I'm really glad that we had this conversation.
Thank you so much. This was so fun. Me too. So thank you.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'll see you soon, I guess.
Awesome. Bye.
Bye.